And we are, we are live.
Hi.
Hey, everybody. We're refactoring how we're doing our music these days. So welcome, everybody, to episode 185 of Live at the Hive, Digital Marketing from the Trenches. I am Dan Nedelko.
And I'm Stacey DeSantis.
And I'm Sachi Dagadeko.
And today we're going to be talking about five types of campaigns you can implement for your business to grow your business today. And one of the key things with marketing campaigns is they seem trivial. What, we should just launch a campaign, a Facebook ad. We should, you know, do this. But there's a lot more in terms of mechanics, moving parts, technical issues, writing, offer, message match, all of these different things that go into it. And it's often a bit of a rabbit hole that once you start with a marketing campaign, you can very easily get lost. You miss one thing and the entire thing can fall over and be ineffective. So our goal today is to walk through five campaign roadmaps that we implement on a regular basis, some of the things that you need to consider with those marketing campaigns, and some of the things that you'll want to take into account in order to make those successful, to make it easier for you to run those marketing campaigns.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just think one of the things that often happens is that, you know, these campaigns seem really simple. And then when you get into all of the details where you have to add tagging and tracking and follow-ups and, you know, there's tons and tons of details. Some of our campaign checklists have 30 to 50 different items that you need to take into account. So it can become very confusing, especially if you're not really familiarized with all of these systems and everything else. So,
yeah, it's kind of the perfect marriage between being creative, experimental, technical, but most of all strategic.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And we've actually had campaigns where, you know, we've had to refactor things very quickly because one element was not working. And then it's not a house of cards, but it definitely, the foundations aren't there and the underpinnings aren't there. You're going to run into some trouble.
Yeah.
For sure. All right. But before we start, let me just see here. Let's get going with what is new.
What's new, Dan?
Oh, geez. Lots. Okay, so I guess probably the first thing in this is gonna, where did my article go now?
It's Friday.
It is Friday. But Google is pushing back plans to phase out third-party cookies until, get this, 2023. So that's a bit of a delay.
Yeah, I guess they were a little overzealous with their timeline.
Well, and that's exactly what the article is discussing, and what you know, the head of Google Chrome is talking about, is that they were overly ambitious. Just give me one second and I'll pull it up here. Okay. Overly ambitious and decided that it's probably best to roll it back a little bit. So for advertisers, I think this is a bit of a sigh of relief.
Yeah. She was like, yep.
Yeah.
And there's also, I think, less to be worried about. I feel like there was a bit of death, doom, and destruction kind of going around, you know, in terms of, you know, what the effects of Apple's changes are, the randomized email addresses that you can create. The one thing about that with the third-party cookies and everything else is with Google, with Apple's randomizing email addresses for registrations, the one key thing there is you have to be a paid member of iCloud and have that feature activated. So in a lot of ways, that is a false positive. Like, yes, people are going to opt out directly, but that's not the entire market. So.
Yeah, for sure. That definitely leaves a segment where you still have that information. I feel like the whole thing was, like you said, a little bit like Chicken Little, the sky is falling and let's just scramble to, you know, come up with an alternative plan and how are we going to monetize this, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. and they were like, probably got knee deep halfway through the planning or reorg, and they were like, whoa.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Pump the brakes.
Well, pump the brakes a little bit. And what Google had introduced before was their privacy sandbox initiative. You know, they're saying that it's going well, but we've got to give it a bit more time to cook and to bake. So, you know, again, I don't think that everybody needs to freak out. I do think that you need to double down on first party data, and you should always be doing that in your digital marketing and making sure you have first party data. You want to own that data. You're investing in it. That's one of the most important things to consider. But you've got to balance that with how the market's going to change.
Yeah. Like even if this wasn't happening, that's still a good practice to have by, you know, collecting that first party data. Like that's invaluable to you.
Absolutely. And we've been working through all of the domain verifications and all of the things in terms of integrating CRMs and integrating customer lists as audiences, both on Google and on Facebook, for each of those ad accounts so that the investment is realized.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse when you talk to someone, they're like, we own nothing. We know we have people out there, but we don't have a list or anything. Please help us.
And then yeah,
we're going back and okay, we got this. But cool. Yeah.
All right. So up next is a whole bunch of Google news happening here. Google has announced a new Ads Creative Studio, collaborative ad creation tool. So we'll see when this rolls out, but you're going to get director mix. You can create video assets at scale. Dynamic display, HTML5 creation, audio mixer and dynamic audio tools, and a project library. So Google seems to be doubling down on some more rich media.
Rock on.
Yeah.
That's going to really help people. Probably cut down time, right, Sachia?
Yeah, for sure.
Well, and this, I think that the other thing about this is too, is, you know, not gone are the days, but you just don't do one HTML5 or a video ad and launch it into a market. What's happening right now, and we'll probably talk a little bit about this during what's working, is that the Google AI wants a lot of variations that you mix and match with headlines, secondary headlines, descriptions, video, creative. So it can algorithmically mix and match everything and test for you. So that's going to be that's a big part of this.
Yeah, like there's a little bit of work that you need to do in advance, and we'll get into it, but you need to kind of do the hard work so you can get the learnings later, so to speak. So by having all those different variants, yeah, it's kind of a little bit of work, you know, because you want to make sure that you have them prepared and ready. But in the long run, you're going to benefit because you're going to learn what messaging works, what, you know, calls to action work, you know, what audiences work, mm-hmm. so on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Just flipping on through these. Google has confirmed that a spam algorithm update on June 23rd has been released, deployed, and completed all in one day.
Wow.
So there you go.
The other thing was delayed by 2 years because they did that in one day.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, Google's a bit of a monster. Web page and image results, and it does not impact local results. So you will want to keep an eye on your organic search traffic and make sure that the signal is not going to hurt you in any possible way. Mm-hmm. Not much more to say about that than that.
Look at us whipping through this.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's been several times where we've gotten to like 4:45. And we're just still on what's new, so.
What are you talking about?
We don't want that. okay. So Snapchat. This is a little bit of your wheelhouse, Stace, I guess.
I know. I was actually, it was kind of like, obviously, they're going to double down on its advertising. Don't you feel that Snapchat is becoming more of like a, I think it's going to evolve to be more of like an online shopping tool, really, you know, yes. In the long run. There's a lot of elements that they're adding that include that piece, right? So it makes sense that they're going to find more ways for advertisers to integrate what they're trying to do in almost like an authentic way to their audience, and then make it easy, the path to purchase a lot easier.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's Snapchat is interesting because they're typically innovators in the market and then everybody copies them.
Yep. Instagram.
Yeah. and so some of their tools will be very experimental, but they've had some good results with Adidas here. Adidas Canada reported a 4.4 times incremental return on ad spend after using the tool. And so they've got some really good e-commerce results with some of their new tools. And yeah, you know, Snap is interesting. I do definitely agree with this idea that there's brand hesitancy around the audience there. And what smaller advertisers can do. I think there's opportunities there, especially some of the work. Sushita, you've been doing a bunch of work on mobile app install campaigns. It's pretty interesting to see when you get the dirty details of a Kochava or Apps Flyer, when you're able to go in there and really see exactly what's going on from an attribution perspective.
Yeah, for sure. And using some of these, you know, Snapchat and TikTok for like integrating them with all of these tools, it's kind of a bit messy, but it's very important in terms of getting your conversion get trackable, basically.
Yeah, all of your attribution data. And you know, the interesting thing on mobile apps, and yes, the setup for some of these mobile attribution platforms can be a little bit messy. Firebase would be the same thing too. But once you go through that work, you can see literally what everybody is doing within the app and how your attribution sources are actually turning into active customers and literally how engaged they are within the app itself on an ongoing basis. So,
you know, but like brands have the opportunity with Snapchat, which is a little unique compared to other social channels where they can really create almost immersive experience, you know, with their filters and such.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really good, it's early days yet, but I think it's going to be something. That's my prediction.
Yeah, for sure. And this one last quote here, I would tend to agree with that. Snapchat is seen as a platform for experimenting rather than guaranteeing results. And I mean, I don't think you can ever guarantee results depending on where you are, but you get a better idea for it. But yeah, you know, Snapchat's making moves and they're not backing down. TikTok is definitely a threat to Snapchat. But you know, they're looking healthy. Ad revenue 66% up this year, up to 770 million. And not too shabby.
No.
Not too shabby at all.
I mean, compared to my bank account, I'm joking. That's amazing.
All right. What's next? What else do we have? We'll just, you know what? We'll do the TikTok one and then we can dive into what's working. How about that?
Rock on.
So Unilever, Geico, Madewell, among the brands embracing a new studio dedicated to TikTok strategy.
Yeah, because frankly, brands really don't know what to do with TikTok. Really, that's what it comes down to. Like, this is great that they're offering it, and I think they're going to see results. But it's just like, oh, all these people are on TikTok. We're hearing all this buzz. How do we even use it? You know, so they're looking to capitalize on that popularity, and yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I still think that brands need to be careful with the way they advertise on TikTok, studio or not. Mm-hmm. It's one of those social platforms that if you come off a little too polished, you lose that authenticity, which people are looking for. So it'll be interesting to see how this works.
Yeah. And I think the interesting thing about this is they're billing themselves as a studio, as a creative studio. So they might have their finger a little bit more on the pulse of what's happening and what kind of content, as opposed to looking at it as an ads platform, which I always see as being a bit of a difficulty. People look at these things as being ad platforms, but they're really creative platforms that you can't just take some vanilla standardized offer that's not going to resonate or is very similar within the market and expect that anything magical is going to happen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like 100%. And on the other flip side, it makes sense for TikTok to invest in a studio to eventually monetize and, you know, get brand buy-in for their platform. So it makes sense on both levels. But yeah, brands as a whole need to concentrate on content and what that means and in problem solution, which we're going to kind of get into with our presentation today. versus just like being like Russell Oliver, buy my jewelry. Like, no.
Oh my God. Right? Like, for anybody not, that's a pretty regional statement, but that's
true.
Kind of a seedy-ish jewelry shop in Toronto that buys gold. Anyhow. Okay. So let's get this queued up here and get dive right in. And so here we are. So five types of campaigns you can use to grow your business. Stacey, why don't you kick us off a little bit?
Well, did you know that campaigns are a great way to grow your brand? Exactly what we've been kind of talking about already with some of the What's New articles. So we're going to talk about, you know, how you can write copy or that's going to actually convert. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about five different campaign types that you can test and learn and try that we've found are successful. And, you know, show you some real world examples. So we're going to put some proof in our pudding.
Mm-hmm.
So to speak, so.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that we'll highlight here is that these are, and Stacey, you mentioned it a little bit earlier. These are not, there's not just copy. There's not just creative. There's MarTech. There's technical marketing that goes into it. There's content strategy that goes into it. And then there's persona activity and understanding. One of the most important things is I think a lot of businesses look at marketing campaigns as the start and stop and start and stop activities. And really, you know, especially in the world that we live in today, the days of social and, you know, this kind of free word of mouth, those days are really gone. And the benefit, though, is that these platforms are super accessible for businesses of any size, and budgets do not have to be massive in order to take advantage of them. So you do want to kind of philosophically, I think, get your head around the idea that marketing campaigns, in addition to your content marketing and your SEO and everything else that you're doing, are part of the ongoing landscape, and they're not this thing that starts and stops. You can have those for sure. But you should always have a heartbeat and a cadence of these campaigns running pretty much at all times to help continue to feed your business so it remains healthy.
Yeah, couldn't say it better myself. You want to integrate the experience. It's not, like you said, stop and start. You, mm-hmm. you want to keep going, keep learning, keep optimizing as you test and learn different, you know, campaign types and different messaging, and look at what you feel is a problem versus solution messaging, and mm-hmm. keep evolving. And in doing so, you're only going to get smarter with your advertising in the long run.
For sure. So Sashita, why don't you walk us through what we're going to be talking about here?
Yeah, for sure. So we'll be talking about the five type of campaigns to grow your business in each, you know, in each step of the marketing funnel. We'll be talking about some real life campaign examples on what the campaign was about, and also why the campaign was successful, some tips and tricks for those, and then how do we target the audience for each of these campaign types.
Okay, just finish my Facebook share here. There we go. Okay, so let's get right into it. Yeah, so we're going to start at the top, which is brand awareness. Let's see what April's got to say. The more you run your campaigns, the more you build your audiences and learn exactly who is engaging with your brand. Absolutely.
Great point, April. Yeah, great 100%. Point.
Yeah, so let's look at brand awareness. And this one is kind of near and dear to my heart, because I think fundamentally one of the things that's really important for everybody to remember, and being in the world of digital marketing, you know, having very early, like I used to run Yahoo Overture campaigns, which was before Google Ads, right? That was the very, very early days of this stuff, where you could really just put a campaign up and get a whole bunch of conversions. It was pretty simple. Those days are gone. Super saturated market. Like, we're talking Snapchat, we're talking TikTok, we're talking Facebook, Instagram, Google, Bing, keep going, right? It's a pretty competitive, saturated market. Fundamentally, the most important thing is that your potential customers know who you are. Just like, distill it down. It's as simple as that. it doesn't get any more complicated. So why don't we walk through how we can create brand awareness using social media marketing and some of the techniques that we've used.
Okay. Cool. Well, where to start, right?
Sashita? This is really Sashita's wheelhouse.
Yeah. Sure. And I know like some people hesitate to put their money in just brand awareness campaigns, but I can't like reiterate how important it is to like start your paid campaign journey. And then talking about how to build your brand awareness. So firstly, I think it is very important to know exactly who your audience are, to be able to target them properly and also build the messaging and the creatives in such a way that they are able to connect with it. After you start working on what your brand personality is going to be and how you want to reflect it through your campaigns, for brand awareness campaign, great tips would be like running a free offer ad or something that at least helps taking that one step forward in the customer journey for the users.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things with brand awareness that's super important at this level, and we're going to talk about audiences because audiences are a core to absolutely everything. This is all the news about first party versus third party cookies. And so if you're looking to understand what this is all about, is audiences are the data that Google and Facebook and Snap and all of the other ones are able to cull after someone has interacted with your campaign.
Did he cut out? I can.
Oh, maybe he did. I thought I cut it. Oh well.
No. Till he comes back, I think I can continue.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So brand audience building for like the brand awareness campaigns. I think that like for Facebook, even there are so many different ways of. Yeah, he's back.
I'm back. So this is a StreamYard bug because I have a very solid internet connection and sometimes it just flakes out and says that I'm gone.
Honestly, Sachina and I were both like, did we just cut out? And so it took a minute there.
it recovers. This is the virtual world that we live in, right?
It is. You just got to roll with it.
Yeah. So one of the things that happens here is when we create content and find the right audience, our goal on this level is to build that audience. We're going to start there and really build up that audience using what is really native content. And by understanding the audience and understanding the content that's really interesting to them, you have a huge opportunity to build a substantially sized audience at a very, very low cost. And that's the goal of this step. It's a very important first step because that audience is pure gold to you. Okay.
For sure.
So when we start with this audience creation at this level, we do want to know it's a broader audience, but it's really interest and intent driven. And we'll show you an example here that we can talk a little. There it is. We'll use this boosted post for brand awareness as the example that we'll kind of go with. Stacey, you're familiar with this one. Do you want to talk through it?
You bet. I absolutely love doing these. So the idea is to share the content that you're producing on your Facebook page as an example. And you want to boost it for engagement. And in doing so, this is a great way that you can build up the engagement metrics on your account, of course, but we use it to actually help us build our followers. So every single time someone actually engages with a post, you can then go in and invite them to like or follow the page, which is a great way to build up the followers, like I was just mentioning. So it captures your audience attention. It shows them the kind of content that you produce and why they should be interested in giving you an opportunity. And you actually start to build, it's more about building a community. So while typically a lot of ads are about getting that conversion, we're actually looking at building the followers, the likes, and actually getting people to interact with the content. So it's creating more of that two-way conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and from that, This interaction on Facebook can be attached to an audience to your pixel. And then you can create a custom audience from these individuals. And you, if you see here in this particular one, and this is a relatively smaller one, we reached 89,500 people. We've got examples where we've reached hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah. They only spent $10, I should mention that.
Yeah. And then they get added to the audience. Very low cost, right? Yeah. High reach, brand awareness, low cost. This should always be the first step in your campaigns. If you don't have the audience, then what are you going to target against? Right? If you try to target demographics, that doesn't imply intent, right?
Exactly. It's almost like you're talking to the wind versus actually talking to a collective group, right? So.
Well, and this is, you know, to make a point, I'm a 48-year-old male. Stacy's in her 40s, married. Sashita's in her 20s and married. If our furnace breaks, the intent is the same. So targeting by age and demographic doesn't necessarily make sense, right? It should be intent driven. Okay.
Yeah. I need a new furnace.
Well, if you need a new furnace, then... You got a couple months to worry about that, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's just talk very quickly about copywriting formulas. And we've got a few here. This is super important to discuss in terms of how you craft that copy. So these are known marketing formulas that are used all over the place. And it's one is problem, agitate, solution, right? This very much puts this in your consumers' shoes, right? Identify the main problem, agitate it with emotion or stresses, then your product or your service is the solution.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think it's important that the nuances of marketing and advertising copywriting are identified, because there are formulas that are known to work, and you should really start with those formulas and tailor them for your own solution.
Yeah, and I think one piece that's often missed is actually pointing out what the problem is. Mm-hmm. Everybody's so quick to get to the solution, they forget that you may need to remind Stacy that she needs a new furnace because it's making a weird noise,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, versus just saying, buy a new furnace. Well, thanks, tips, but like, why? Why do I need that, right? So you want to offer that problem or that pain point.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, you can write it out the way that this example is, which is PAS, problem, agitation, solution, and really just kind of create a few variations that you should always be doing this in your marketing and advertising copywriting.
100%. Yep.
Okay. The next one is called anaphora. And that's just repetition. This is why when you listen to radio commercials or often on television, if there's a telephone number, it's usually repeated 3 times. That solidifies the message and makes sure that your consumers are able to absorb it.
And that's why jingles work too.
Absolutely. Right? Like, that's why jingles work. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, if it's recognizable, like, look at me, I was like quoting Russell Oliver. Have I ever done business with the man? No, but that is something that has been repeated to me over and over and over again. I remember it.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are.
Absolutely. All right. So just to review this one very, very quickly again, this is your brand awareness ad. We're using boosted content. Create content that's engaging, that's either polarizing or interesting, or where people can take a side. In this case, it's sports. So that's a relatively easy example. Make sure that the content is written and directed for your community. And when you boost it, make sure that their interest, and if we're talking about Facebook, not just their interests, but pages they follow, interests that they have, location would probably make a lot of sense as well, or various locations. Just as an example for this one is for the... Yeah, that's for Colombia versus Peru. So that's the FIFA qualifiers, World Cup qualifiers. So you would obviously want potentially people in Colombia and in Peru, but there's Colombian and Peruvian neighborhoods and areas across Canada, across the United States, these are very polarizing. Like FIFA World Cup is very polarizing for people. They tend to cheer for the country of their origin, right?
Yeah, and we also made sure to target language.
Yep.
Right, which is important as well.
Yep. So there's language and language and region, right? There's both. Yep.
Yeah.
So for sure. So those are the elements of this, and you can put this together, and this boosted content strategy is a great way to, if, like I said, if this $10 spend, if you were to do this, you know, once a week to similar audiences, they're going to start to recognize who you are. And that's the most important part here, and build your audience.
And just another great tip for the brand awareness campaign audiences would be Facebook offers these custom audiences, such as, you know, people who are already following you on Facebook or who have visited your website. Maybe you want to exclude those just to like save on wasting your budget on people who already are engaged with your Facebook page, already who know you.
Yep. Yep, especially if you have an older page that may have large numbers and low engagement. You want to reinvigorate those audiences and ensure that people are still actually relevant to, you know, your business as well. All right, so this is Sashida's wheelhouse. Sashida, take it away. Lead ads. This is
my favorite. Okay. Okay, yeah. So lead generation campaign. So a lead is some user who has who's interested in your product or services, and in this case, like for driving downloads, a lead is somebody who has given you certain contact information, maybe a simple email address, to get access to a important piece of information related to your product or service that you want to market. So driving downloads for lead generation campaigns, this is something we have talked about, but it's kind of a lead magnet campaign. So you lead your users to a landing page where to drive, downloads for certain checklists or any important information, maybe a DIY kit, just to give them some more piece of information related to your product. And this asset can be a gated asset. So they will have to enter their email address or any contact information to get this piece of information.
Yeah, for sure. A couple of things. This lead gen, there's a few different ways that you can rationalize this type of lead gen. So you can use email. If appropriate, you can use messengers or SMS. And there's specifically, which I think is in the next couple of slides, this one here is leads to an optimized landing page for a registration. And this lead gen ad is not about the product itself, but, you know, engagement party ideas for a wedding organizing app is scratching the itch of the why, as opposed to necessarily download and install the app first. This is like the first step in that process. So we're trying to give something of high value, high perceived value, right? And the goal here is to obviously to get that data, but you can also start creating those remarketing audiences as well from this type of a campaign. So it's really based on that content is a big part of it. So there's that format. Let's see here. And there are specifically here, you can see Facebook lead gen ad formats. And Sashida, we've had really good success because you're eliminating, removing people from the social network they're on.
Yeah, for sure. And these Facebook lead forms are, now even Google has incorporated these lead generation forms, but like Dan said, it reduces one step, and especially for certain type of demographics where they kind of get lost or they don't know what to take the right action on a landing page, even after we having so many visitors, we don't get those leads. So instead of that, this is a good way to capture these leads in Facebook itself. And these forms offer a number of options for the question fields, which Facebook already has. So nobody has to actually manually enter that information. It is auto-filled by Facebook, and they have to just click the submit, and that's all. And we have their information to include them in our email marketing lists.
Yeah. And this is all about removing friction, removing steps, removing friction, making it as easy as possible and providing value. So yeah. These Facebook lead gen forms, the format has been highly effective. And you can connect them to your CRM. Facebook has a number of automated connectors, so you don't have to start, you know, copying and pasting lead data and all those issues. So, you know, lots of good things that you can do. Here's another example.
Yeah, these are just the three steps. So whenever a user clicks on your ad, is directed to the front page, the introduction page, talking about what your campaign is about, and then just after clicking the next page, it goes to your contact information, and then just a privacy policy page to ensure just a disclaimer that we will be contacting them in future for any references or to book a consultation or you know, to get them in the step ahead of the journey. And just thank you page where they can also visit the website in case they need some more information.
Mm-hmm. And one of the important things here is what's really changing with digital marketing. And yes, landing pages are important. And yes, you should integrate them. And yes, you should use them. But you should also investigate this kind of stateless campaign that does not lead to a landing page, because there are various other ways that you can create that engagement and generate your lead to begin that whole nurturing and cadence process.
Yeah. And you want to make it easy. Ultimately, at the end of the day, no friction. Like, people don't have time. They're on social for a reason. They're probably on mobile.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they just want to be like, swipe, go, hit, click, boom, right? Like,
yeah, and we will also talk about micro moment campaigns, which are in a sense similar to this. Some of these could be micro moment campaigns. Like, if we're talking about investment advice around tax time, you know, that's a really strong angle to take when people are feeling that, you know, the financial pressures of tax time, and they're actually thinking about it, then that is the time to be doing this type of campaigning. Okay, so we just have just a few other simple examples. And again, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Google, using that multi-platform approach, it can be a really strong way to approach this. Okay, zipping right along. We're at 4 of 5, so we've done 3 so far. So, you know, just on the webinar is a little bit more of a commitment. I would say it's more of a bottom of funnel. If someone's going to spend a half hour, 45 minutes, or an hour with you, that means they're making a big time commitment. But you can start, you see brand awareness, create lead magnets that are high value, informational, that are providing value to your users, and then say a webinar or an on-demand recording, there you're starting to see a funnel take place. And obviously you'd customize this for your specific business.
Right. For sure. I like contests as an offer, maybe after you've done like a lead magnet, just because you don't really want to give away, like if you're a small business, you don't want to start just giving away the farm. Like you want to be like nurture them a bit, get them aware of who you are, and then maybe both bring them into a contest to further increase that engagement and that nurturing. Mm-hmm. But then you're actually targeting to people that have already maybe engaged with your brand and are more likely to convert. So
yeah, for sure. I think there's a couple of nuances with contests. Like, look, everybody loves contests and special offers, right?
Yeah.
But there are a certain number of people that are just contest chasers. So they may not be qualified. They'll just register for a contest no matter what it is.
And there are Facebook pages and sites that like totally back up that up too. Like what you're just saying, that just are dedicated to contesting.
Yeah.
You know.
So look, everybody loves the contest, but I would tend to agree. If you've got that audience data that you're building over time and these multi-stage funnel approach campaigns, then the contesting campaigns then become more relevant to people that already know about you, as opposed to people that are just discovering you because they want to win something for free, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So this, we'll just jump right here to some of the contesting campaigns. So yeah, you know, they don't have to be huge in terms of the dollar amounts, but they should definitely have a value and a relevance to your user.
Yeah, and what's nice about this is that we were actually looking to generate reviews or app reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And we're incentivizing people to leave a review in exchange for small prize. And so Sachita can speak more to the results of this campaign, but it was an interesting way to go about it. Like, the ask is small on our end for a a generous return to the person leaving the review.
Yeah, and in terms of results, I think this campaign really did well because, like Dan mentioned, really low cost. And secondly, kind of hit two birds with one arrow. So this was about leaving a review to win $100 a Visa card. So I think people would have to go to the respective app stores to actually download the app and leave a review. So that is like both missions accomplished.
Yeah, and it shows a high level of intent, right? If someone's going to go through those steps to do it,
exactly.
And you know, when you're planning a wedding, there's, you know, every $100 is always welcome because it adds up.
100%.
Yeah,
I like the Cheetah's version of kill two birds with one stone. She's using an arrow. Very Hunger Games of you, Sachita. Sorry, I had to throw that out there.
Yeah, I've always thought that one and kicking a dead cat were kind of really odd analogies to make.
I thought it was a horse.
Why are we killing animals here?
I don't know.
All right, just another example. Again, you know, there are lots of platforms and tools you can use for interactions. There's Spin the Wheel, there's Scratch Cards. People do love to play games. And I think, you know, adding a bit of fun to it is always a good idea. So, you know, try your contesting and make sure that you're contesting. I would also suggest that contesting be done consistently on a regular basis. And it's better to have micro campaigns and micro contests instead of necessary. I mean, if you can afford it, you know, the $20,000 grand prize is always great. But, you know, I would say be consistent rather than doing one once a year, for example.
Yeah, 100%.
All right. So just to wrap this up, this is, I think, a really important topic, which are what are called micro moment campaigns. And this theme has been popping up in, I think, the last three or four episodes, but they are important. These micro moments are intent rich moments, typically happen on a mobile device. And they're, I want to know, I want to go, I want to do, I want to buy. Moments, and they come and they go really quickly. And the importance of marketing campaigns are that, done properly, you can position yourself to take advantage of these moments at a relatively low cost, but you have to plan it out, right? Just as an example, I want to go moments. I would suggest then you could use Waze campaigns, you could use Google Map pin campaigns to highlight your business that would not break the bank, but be available there 24/7 whenever one of your potential customers may want to go to your physical location, right? You've got to map out these moments. And this is a specific type of a campaign, and they're really important because over time, they really do. Everybody that's in these micro moments has a super high level of intent, and that's the most important thing. A driven lead and a driven customer is going to purchase. You're not going to have to convince them in those moments.
Yeah, a lot of retailers will actually, if you're in like a Lowe's and you go on your browser on your phone to look up something, their site will pop up first.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've noticed that. And it's brilliant because, okay, you're looking for something, you're in Lowe's, here you go.
For sure.
That whole path is just so seamless.
Yeah, and Sachita, maybe you can just educate people on what extensions are and what they mean.
Yeah, for sure. So certain search engines like Google, Bing, they offer such extra elements apart from your main text ad. These are called extensions, and they are different types of extensions, like there are site-linked extensions. So they come with a text, and they can lead you directly to the certain web page, depending on where you want to send them. And then there are call out extensions which mention or highlight the types of services or amenities that your business offers. Also, there are call extensions, lead gen form extensions. There are a number of extensions that you can use depending on what business you're into. And yeah, I forgot to mention the location extensions as well. So especially if you're into restaurants or any service that, you know, I usually search restaurants near me or Italian restaurants near me. So you want to hit that, you know, you want to be there for your customers when they have these kind of micro moments. And how do we use such in our advantage to get them, bring them to our business?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the purpose of this. These extensions were created by Google based on all of this micro moments research they spent years doing, which, you know, you can have a call extension, a map extension, and you can become Google verified as well with a big trust mark, and you can put reviews on there. So if I had a pool repair business or pool support business, for example, and I put those map, call, and 24/7 service extensions, that can hit that micro moment when someone wants to reach out because something's wrong, my pool filter's not working, or, you know, whatever. And this is one of the techniques that you use and integrate them into your campaigns to make sure that those items are relevant and top of those search results. And that's a really, really, really critical part of a well thought out digital marketing strategy from the paid perspective, right? You don't want to just put up one search ad with no extensions and just leave it at that and call it a day.
Yeah, it's creating more of a holistic approach overall, I think.
Mm-hmm. You know? Absolutely.
And absolutely. You know nothing about pool filters not working, Dan.
I've rebuilt a hot tub and a pool in the last like 3 years.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. Damn good. All right, everybody. Well, that's a wrap for episode 185. I hope that that was educational and informative. So we will, looks like we're going to have a rainy weekend here in Southern Ontario.
I'm loving it. At least I don't have to do yard work.
Yeah, till next week when everything grows like mad. So, all right, everyone. Well, thanks for joining us for episode 185 of Live at the Hive Digital Marketing from the Trenches. We will see you next week. Same B time, same B channel.
Take care. Peace. Bye.